1500 UTC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, October 18, 2023. U.S. President Joe Biden is in Tel Aviv.
The people of Gaza need food, water, medicine, shelter. Today I asked the Israeli cabinet I met with for some time this morning.
And UN says South Sudan's conflict has affected South Sudan. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. U.S. President Joe Biden is in Tel Aviv to show solidarity with the Israelis, secure safe passage of Americans trapped in Gaza, and easy deployment of Palestinians under Israeli siege since the present attack by militant group Hamas on October 7th. The trip is overshadowed by an attack on a hospital in Gaza, which led to the cancellation of Biden's summit with regional leaders. Here is what President Joe Biden had to say.
The people of Gaza need food, water, medicine, shelter. Today I asked the Israeli cabinet, who I met with for some time this morning, to agree to the delivery of life-saving humanitarian assistance to civilians in Gaza, based on the understanding that there will be inspections and that the aid should go to civilians, not to Hamas. Israel agreed the humanitarian assistance can begin to move from Egypt to Gaza. Let me be clear. If Hamas diverts or steals the assistance, they will have demonstrated once again that they have no concern for the welfare of the Palestinian people. And it will end. As a practical matter, It will stop the international community from being able to provide this aid.
White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadekwaswara has more on President Joe Biden's trip to Tel Aviv.
Hundreds were killed in an explosion Tuesday at Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City. Palestinian authorities blamed an Israeli airstrike, while Israel said it was a rocket from the militant group Islamic Jihad that misfired. That group denied responsibility. The attack happened hours before President Joe Biden departed for Tel Aviv to meet Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to show U.S. commitment to Israel's security and push for humanitarian aid for Gazans following days of shuttle diplomacy by Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
It is critical that aid begin flowing into Gaza as soon as possible.
Biden was scheduled to continue to Amman, Jordan, but after the Gaza hospital attack, that part of the trip was canceled. He will not be meeting leaders of neighboring countries, King Abdullah of Jordan and President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi of Egypt, or Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, who returned to Ramallah, where thousands of Palestinians protested the hospital attack. Palestinian envoy to the UN, Riyad Mansour.
Our Jordanian brothers said that we cannot have a summit with these conditions. We don't know what the other President Biden is still going there or not. The only thing that would make sense if he made ceasefire immediately, and I'm coming to force the implementation of ceasefire.
Since the militant group Hamas launched its brazen incursion on October 7th, Israel has launched strikes on Gaza, in one case killing six people at a United Nations school where 4,000 Palestinians have taken refuge, the UN said. 2 million Gazans are under siege. President of the European Council, Charles Michel.
A total siege when you cut the basic infrastructure, when you cut access to water, when you cut electricity, if you don't allow food to be delivered, this is not in line with the international law.
Two U.S. carrier strike groups have been deployed to show support for Israel and deter other actors in the region. Jonathan Lord is a senior fellow at the Center for New American Security.
This is a massive amount of force, and it affords President Biden many options
to respond should Hezbollah or other proxies of Iran decide to opportunistically either attack U.S. forces or to attack Israel.
In Tel Aviv, Biden will ask Israel how it plans to minimize civilian casualties. He will push for a humanitarian corridor to allow aid into Gaza and for the release of hostages held by Hamas. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Tensions have been rising on the Lebanese-Israeli border since Israel began military action against Hamas in Gaza Strip. The Lebanese militant political group Hezbollah has warned that an Israeli ground invasion of Gaza would bring them into conflict, a promise that would inevitably drag Lebanon into a costly and specially complicated war. Jacob Russell has this report from Beirut.
As Israel appears to be preparing for an invasion of the Gaza Strip, the Lebanese militant political group Hezbollah has said that this would provoke their entry into the war. The border between Israel and Lebanon has been tense for years, with Israeli defense forces and Hezbollah periodically exchanging fire. Until now, both sides have respected rules of engagement designed to avoid triggering a full-scale war. But already, in the first few days of the Israel-Hamas conflict, the violence along Lebanon's border with Israel has escalated considerably, causing casualties on both sides of the border. Mohamed Haj Ali is Deputy Director of Research at the Carnegie Middle East Center.
Compared to the previous rules of engagements and the attacks that happened in the past 2 days were an escalation of what we've had in the past. And I think what comes next is also going to be, within the same frame, and a kind of an upgrade in terms of violence that we've previously seen. But the question is, you know, are both sides interested in keeping it within this confined space?
Inside Lebanon, Hezbollah enjoys support from those who see it as defending a just cause. Among them is Ahmed, whose full name is withheld.
It's not okay to listen to hurt Palestinian people, children and civilians. It should be military against military.
However, many also remember the last time the two sides went to war in 2006 and do not want to be dragged into another one. Tony, a barber, was asked if he fears another confrontation with Lebanon's southern neighbors.
Of course we're afraid. It will destroy our homes. It will destroy our country. We've had enough. We don't want it.
The likely destruction that Lebanon would experience in another war with Israel would have serious consequences for the country's fragile internal order, says the Carnegie Middle East Center's Mohamed Haj Ali.
If there's a massive Israeli bombing campaign out of 2006, leading to a great destruction within Lebanon, that would reshuffle the cards internally.
Hezbollah appears to have little interest in assuaging the concerns of other Lebanese. Speaking anonymously, a senior commander recently told VOA News that the party has units in Beirut at full readiness to defend its supporters from other Lebanese factions. He said, quote, "If necessary, we can take over this country in 24 hours. Lebanon is still reeling from a profound socio-economic crisis and could ill afford to rebuild after a war. Internally, the long-term consequences of war would depend heavily on Hezbollah's ability to secure funding for reconstruction. Jacob Russell for VOA News, Beirut, Lebanon.
Still in the Middle East, the Israeli-Hamas war began more than a week ago. The only entrance to Gaza was destroyed, and Palestinian workers in Israel could not get home. Now thousands of men are trapped on the outside, while their parents, siblings, wives and children try to survive the bombing in Gaza. VOA's Hada Murdoch reports from Ramallah in the West Bank.
In this municipal building in Ramallah, a city in the occupied West Bank, hundreds of men spend their days despairing as the war between Israel and Hamas takes an increasing toll on civilians in Gaza. Many say they would rather risk death and go home than hear about their family's suffering on the phone or by text message. Saleh Hassan has a wife and three teenage daughters, all trapped inside Gaza. He says his family was living a normal life with dreams and hopes for the future. His daughter was in university studying English and wanted to graduate, but now their hopes are shattered and their lives are destroyed. Gaza is home to 2 million people, and the only border crossing that was open before the war was destroyed on the first day of fighting when Hamas conducted a massive surprise attack. Since then, Israel has conducted a near-constant bombing campaign on Gaza. Families have been told to evacuate some areas of Gaza, which is roughly 40 kilometers long and 10 kilometers wide, but there is no way to escape. But Hassan says his family wouldn't go, even if they could. His wife, he says, tells him they want to stay in their home until they are hit by bombs and die. Aid workers say they are providing food and housing for the men, who are among thousands of workers from Gaza whose Israeli work permits were revoked after the start of the war. Isra Ghanem is a volunteer who helps provide food and support for the displaced men. She says up to 800 men stay in the building, and they try to provide support while the men hear stories of death and destruction from their families by phone. But supplies are already running low, she says, and there is limited support coming in. Israel has vowed to utterly defeat Hamas in this war, and Hamas has declared it has a plan to defend itself. Many men here say they have given up hope for a happy outcome and believe that they may never see their families again. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Ramallah, West Bank.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN says Sudan's conflict has inflicted sufferings on South Sudanese. Find out how after this break.
On important questions. The question today:
how does your family take care of an elderly relative?
Once in a while, we sit down with him, speak with him, ask him how he's doing so he doesn't feel lonely. Then we also tell him about what is going on in the world so that he doesn't feel left out.
We make sure we provide the basic needs like food, water, make her happy, not to feel rejected. Because when they are growing and you start to abandon them, they see that they are not needed, and showing them love even brings them healing.
Helping them with the domestic chores, for example, preparing meals for them, helping them with the clothes, cleaning up the house.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says funding shortages is impeding efforts by aid agencies to respond to the growing needs of families affected by the conflict in Sudan. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
The acting UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, Marie-Hélène Vanni, says agencies in South Sudan did not expect a huge influx of returnees and refugees from Sudan. She says aid agencies have so far recorded more than 320,000 returnees and refugees who have entered South Sudan since conflict broke out in Sudan mid-April, adding that thousands of families continue to arrive in South Sudan every day. Vanni says a majority of the new arrivals need urgent humanitarian support.
And the problem with that is that as the weeks go by, people arrive with less and less resources. Their health has been more and more impacted by the situation in Sudan. And we're seeing rising rates of malnutrition, especially among children arriving from Sudan.
UN OCHA says the Sudan conflict has worsened the humanitarian situation in South Sudan, which is characterized by food insecurity, flooding, and intercommunal conflict.
The Sudan crisis has stretched a humanitarian response in South Sudan very close to breaking point. And with no end in sight, a global decrease in humanitarian funding and more new conflicts breaking out around the world, humanitarian partners are increasingly forced to deprioritize even life-saving activities.
She says the influx of returnees and some refugees has impacted lives of some South Sudanese living in the northern half of the country. James Kea Nimro is the executive director for the national NGO Universal Intervention for Development Organization, or UNIDO, which operates in Lair County of Unity State. He says local and national NGOs are unable to provide much-needed support to the returnees and refugees due to funding shortages.
So the situation is really bad, but there has been no other opportunities, there has been no windows for this returnee to be supported. At the point of national NGOs, it has been a huge challenge because even people come to our facilities, we are unable to respond to them. And this is because we do not have any reserve fund.
The United Nations says disruptions in cross-border trade due to the ongoing conflict in Sudan have led to increased prices of essential commodities, including food, in the country's northern states, where a majority of the new arrivals are settling. For VOA News, I'm Charlton Doki in Juba.
Still on the effects of the conflict in Sudan, a political analyst notes that the absence of unified regional and international positions on the Sudan conflict is hindering resolution efforts. Now in its sixth month, renowned Sudanese human rights lawyer Salih Mahmoud, who recently returned from meetings in Brussels and The Hague with the European Union and the International Criminal Court officials concerning Sudan, shares his insights with VOA's Nabil Biagio.
After 6 months, the situation is that violations, serious violations regarding human rights and basic rights of the people of Sudan, all over Sudan now, it is not only Darfur. Thousands have been killed all over the country now, especially in Khartoum. Occupation of residential areas, houses of the citizens, demolitions, destructions of infrastructure, and forcing millions of Sudanese to flee their homes. We have influx of refugees, of people going to Chad. We have people fleeing, going to Egypt, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Uganda, Nairobi, and outside Africa. Now, the situation after 6 months, the world, the regional institutions like the African Union, IGAD, and African Peace and Security Council are very much late. And they are also not very much unified on agreeing on a unified position regarding the situation in Sudan and Darfur. Likewise, it is also our international institutions like the EU and then the AU, General Assembly, the UN Security Council, and lastly, I think also the Human Rights Council in Geneva, but it's good that the Human Rights Council adopted a proposal or a resolution to send a fact-finding mission to Sudan this time. This is positive, although it came very late. So I think initiatives are not there. Serious crimes are occurring. Response from our regional and international institutions is not adequate, it's late, it's obscure, and no unified position to address this pressing humanitarian situation.
Sudan has been at war officially for half a year. What factors do you think are complicating finding a solution? What's wrong with the mediation efforts we saw from the beginning and the diplomatic efforts?
That is simply because this war, both belligerent parties have friends and have allies, have supporters on the regional level and international level. It's why? Because Sudan is, like geopolitics of Sudan, affects positions of interested parties, regional-wise and international-wise. Regional-wise, it is because, like the RSF, Rapid Support Force, has relation, economical, political relations with regional actors, the same with international actors, the same between the South also, having the same, after 30 years, they were able to build this net of interest, political and economical interest with the rest of the world, so that now you can see how international and regional actors are divided. They are not able to take a serious and independent position regarding the involvement and implications of the both belligerent parties to this war. To add to that, also, it is the national actors. I think the FFC is more like also partner to this division of the international and regional actors.
That's Salih Mahmoud, Sudanese political analyst and human rights lawyer. He was speaking with Nabil Biagio from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, earlier today. From East Africa, we move to West Africa, where findings to solutions growing trend of out-of-school children in Nigeria has become a national emergency. An estimated 20 million children are not attending school, a situation that experts blame on a mix of cultural, economic, and infrastructure problems, none of which have easy solutions. Gibson Emeka has this report from Abuja, Nigeria.
Joshua Gideon head a public elementary school in Arasabo community in North Central Nigeria. Why children here want to learn? He says many cannot afford books or other school supply. Not having these children in school, Gideon said, is a recipe for national crisis.
The basic education which is necessary for an individual to become something in future, that foundation is not being given to them, then definitely they will mess up in the community.
The number of children hawking or begging for alms in the streets of Nigeria allied the epic challenge. While primary education is officially free and compulsory in Nigeria, the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, estimated last year that about 20 million children aged 5 to 14 are not in school. Gideon says one problem is a simple lack of schools.
We don't have enough chairs for these children to be able to settle and read well. Conducive environment is not there. We need like all these buildings. You can see our buildings are already dilapidated.
Another educator, James Rotimi, says cultural and economic factors are also keeping children out of classroom.
There are places where girls are not supposed to go to school, or girls are supposed to be early marriage and child marriage in some places. In other places, conflict, like where you have the Boko Haram crisis, people are displaced. You have economic factors too. A lot of people have to go and work early in life to help and support the family.
The Nigeria Government Universal Basic Education Commission has said the nation needs to build 20,000 new schools with nearly a million classrooms to accommodate out-of-school children. Rotimi believes the government target is a tall ambition.
Where we are today, it's a bit difficult to say we want to achieve that. If you look at the allocation that education gets across the years, in 2016, only 9 trillion naira was allocated to education. That's about 8.4 billion of the national budget, 8.4% of the national budget. But as of 2022, the allocation to education has dropped to 5.4%.
With 42% of Nigeria's current population below age 15, Rotimi says the country needs to find alternative funding channel to ramp up investment in basic education.
There should be an intentional move to bring in private sector to invest in the education system. And there should be incentives like tax relief for intervening in education, in the education sector, for private sector. That is a key an important move. Then the communities too can be involved.
On paper, Nigeria has strong education policy, but education expert says implementation of this policy has been slow and uneven, and are urging action so children get in schools. Gibson Emeka, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
And I will repeat, we look forward to hearing from you every Friday. Send your voice and text messages on issues in this broadcast. We love to hear both the negative and the positive sides of how we are doing our work. Tell us what you want us to cover and how you want us to cover it, and we shall read your texts or play your voice messages every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, October 18, 2023. We now leave you with Brenda Fassi with her mix of the song Vulindela. Listening to a remix of Brenda Fassi's song Vulindela, which means open the way. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bob Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.